The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Just coming up to 9:30, and you know, just to remind you, Commander Chris Hadfield, he was the first Canadian to walk in space. He's a former Air Force fighter pilot. He was undertaken three space shuttle missions, but it was, in some ways, the weightless version of the Bowie classic Space Oddity he'd posted on YouTube as he handed over command of the International Space Station in 2013 that made him a global celebrity. And then closer to home, he became something of a friend of the countries. And it's a great pleasure to welcome him to our radio show this morning. Chris Hadfield, nice to see you again. Thanks for coming
in. It's great to see you as well, Ryan. How have you been?
Good, thank you. And yourself?
Busier than ever. Amazing host of projects I'm involved in right now. Yeah. I'm really enjoying this phase of life.
We'll talk all about it in a second. But I want to go down, before we get into, we got a heap of messages of goodwill and memories of meeting and so on. We'll get to those in a moment. But I think if you don't mind, I'd like to go back to the farm that you grew up on, and to the five-year-old and the empty box, cereal box. You know, this is the stuff of childhood dreams and ambitions that writers have been putting pen to paper about for years.
It's delightful. My folks are still on that farm. And so I get to go back to my roots on a regular basis, which is a really healthy thing to do if you get a chance.
Sure.
You can get so wrapped up in this particular phase of your adult life that you tend to forget where you came from. But on that farm and at the little tiny summer cottage that we would go to, I would learn how to work, but also spend time looking up and thinking about what might lie beyond the horizon, and watching some of the fantastic imagery coming in through our little tiny television. It seems so different and surreal from a farmer's life to see the first human beings going to space and then walking on the moon and recognizing that this is a thing that people are doing, that even me, that maybe I might have a chance, if I could turn myself into somebody else, that maybe I might have a chance to go do those things. And so now, having, as you said, having flown in space three times and commanded a space station and walked in space, to be able to go back to that farm and walk that land and sit on some of the same tractors that my dad's had all that time, to me, it's a wonderful full circle of introspective life.
Because you know that expression, you earth yourself. You know, you put your feet back on ground, and you couldn't earth yourself more than at the homestead.
Yeah, it's really lovely. I'm lucky enough that my parents are both still healthy and alive, and my dad's still flying his two little airplanes, and my brothers and I fly with him to make sure he's doing well.
How old are your folks?
My dad's about to turn 86.
And he's still flying?
Yeah, he flies two airplanes. One's an old biplane that he does aerobatics with. And yeah, in fact, without them, he would be a much older man. They keep him young. They challenge him. They give him a difficult purpose to really focus his energies to. So everyone should have that at every phase of their life.
You hear that a lot, don't you? If people retire, particularly from a job they love, or from a world they adored being in, the reason, the purpose seems to dissipate a bit.
Have you ever thought about it for yourself?
Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet, because I love what I do. So like, right. I'm like you. I'm not like you. In the sense that I think we both like what we do.
Right.
And with that in mind, you know, you wouldn't be in a rush off anywhere else.
No. And I think it's, no matter what stage of life you're at, it's important to look not just around and back, but to look forwards and say, where is this heading? And what are the challenges I'm looking forward to over the next decade, especially since we just came into 2020?
Yeah.
You know, where am I going to be by 2030? What things do I want to try and get done these 10 years? How can I change myself? To me, that's what's happening now and what's happening next is always the most interesting part of life.
How do you go, Chris, from an ambition to be a pilot in a plane to an astronaut in a shuttle?
Well, really, it's just a verb, right? You fly. We fly in space. And,
sure.
And so when I was that 9-year-old boy, the year that Neil and Buzz walked on the moon, I recognized that astronauts fly. And I thought, well, if it's a verb, surely I can learn to do that. And so it gave me a short-term task. Obviously, you know, to walk on the moon or command a space station is a far cry from being 9 years old. But to learn to fly a glider or fly a kite first and then maybe a little model airplane and then as you turn 14 or 15, you can actually start to fly airplanes. It gave me a route to follow, a changes to try and make within myself that then might someday allow me to fly something more complex. And so I began with as an air cadet with gliders and then powered airplanes and then, as you say, through to the Royal Canadian Air Force and complex airplanes and then fighter airplanes during the Cold War. And then for me, the greatest flying of all, and that was as a test pilot, where you take all of the engineering and things I'd learned on the farm and then flying very complicated airplanes to try and make aviation safer and better. And that all, incredibly enough, led to flying spaceships.
And was the ultimate aim to be in the stars, like to be in space? Or was it step by step?
Both. It's hard to know which step to take if you don't have an ultimate aim. Like if you don't know where you're headed, how do you know what to do next? And so I think as we turn the calendar to 2020, it's important to think about if my life goes perfectly, what will I be doing by 2030? And therefore, what should I maybe do this weekend to change who I am slightly to try and shift towards that? What issues are important to me? You know, what's going on in the world around me? How do I want to improve myself, but also what do I want to contribute to at a larger level than just internally? And then how can I start making those changes? And so I'd set myself the crazy goal of walking on the moon, which I still haven't done yet. So, but that allowed me then to choose what to do next every weekend. You know, just, if that's what I really want to do, then this weekend maybe I should do this, go read this book or study this or go do this at an airport or whatever, go to this museum, try and understand. And slowly the block of wood that each of us is, slowly whittle and sculpt, you know, who you are into what it is you're trying to be.
In your writings and speaking about your experiences going to space, I'm always struck by the enormity of the responsibility of just keeping it all afloat.
Yeah.
You know, yourself, your crew, the dream.
I look at it as an enormous privilege, Ryan. I recognize the incredible rarity of the experiences that I've had of flying in space, of doing spacewalks. I mean, almost at any given gathering of people anywhere, there are more people than have ever walked in space in all human history. But with that privilege then comes responsibility. If you're going to be trusted to do these things, then you really have to take it seriously. Mm. And it's not like it's portrayed in film, you know, where it's just a bunch of cowboys going for a ride.
Sure.
It is very much a focused life's work to try and effectively do these things we're trusted to do. And it is step by step. If I'm going to do this thing, but if someone told you, Ryan, in 5 years, you are going to walk in space and build a huge robot on the outside of a space station, that would give you a whole different focus of what you need to do starting, you know, this January. I need to start getting good at this and understanding this. And boy, I need to start practicing and keeping my body in shape. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of approach space flight that way. But that's now as well. That's how I approach all of life.
What a great attitude. If you talk about fun and fear, what is the most fun thing about space?
Weightlessness.
And what is
being able to fly. It's like having a superpower. Weightlessness is just a continuous, bottomless joy. It's great.
Why is it so? You smile like a boy when you say weightlessness. It's amazing to see.
Every picture of an astronaut flying around in weightlessness, they have a big, goofy, childlike grin on their face. You would if we suddenly shut off gravity for just 1 minute in Ireland and everyone could fly. But the laughter, you could hear it everywhere. It's just, it is so much fun to be released from the oppression of gravity.
Is it addictive? I mean, did you miss it when it wasn't happening?
When you first return home, gravity just seems so unfair. I mean, why are we all crushed into the ground by this invisible authoritarian heel of gravity? It's so nice to be weightless.
Yes.
So, yeah, you'd love it.
Okay, and the flip of that, the fear. When are you most fearful in space?
There are moments of extreme danger. Launch is the most dangerous thing I've done in my life. The odds of dying on my first space shuttle launch were 1 in 38. So if you launch 38 times, someone's going to die. So that's a huge responsibility to then change who you are, understand the machine so well, the 10,000 things that have that high chance of going wrong, that you will recognize them and respond appropriately so that today won't be the day that it will all come apart. With great opportunity and great responsibility inevitably comes risk. But some things are worth taking a risk for. And to me, exploring the rest of the universe, understanding our world better, trying to understand how to make things better on the planet, that's worth taking a risk for.
And is that, and I say this respectfully, and you don't have to answer that from a personal point of view, but can you imagine that around the kitchen table of an astronaut's family, when a spouse would say, 1 in 38 chances of this, of you not coming back from this launch, you are a selfish man. You're taking this risk. You've got these gorgeous children. And who the hell do you think you are?
So I met my wife when she was 14.
Yes.
And we're lucky enough to have now, we just celebrated whatever that is, our 38th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
And have three children and a granddaughter. My wife talked me into it, not out of it, at several stages, because I went through that level of my own personal desires and willingness to take risk, but I'm not an island. I'm not alone. But she said, hey, giving up on your dreams doesn't come for free either. And if this is really important to you, let's just get over the fact that we're all going to die. Everyone's going to die eventually. It's an unavoidable fact of life. The important thing is, what do you do while you're alive? And how close can you get to the things that you truly are in your heart and that you dream of? And let's support each other in those. And okay, so if the thing you chose to do has a risk, fine, let's buy life insurance. That's why it exists. You're going to get good at this job. It's probably not going to kill you. But if it does, I mean, people die for foolish reasons as well. If it does, then it's not the end of life for everyone else. It will be sad, but we would also be sad if we said, you can't do what's important to you and what you dream of, and live with that. That also is a burr under your saddle for the rest of your life. So I think it's important to not take foolish risk in your life, to be measured in your risk taking, to share the assumption of risk with the people that are important to you, and to believe in a common set of goals. And it's the overcoming of risk and the accomplishment of complex things that gives a great shared sense of accomplishment. Yeah. You know, doing things together is the real joy of it. And so my wife not only got to share in the risk, but she has had a great chance to share in the joys that come from the result.
It strikes me as like a stoical romance, you know, covering all angles, but in a really lovely way.
Well, she's a very practical woman. She's like, yeah, I don't want to steal his joy. I mean, he was a test pilot before, crazy dangerous job, but also a job that needs doing. If we're going to have better transportation, better airplanes, someone has to test all those airplanes. Someone has to turn the problems with the Boeing 737 into a nice, safe airplane that everyone can trust. And that's the job of test pilots. And so it was a job I took very seriously and took it up another whole order of magnitude to fly spaceships.
We're inundated with questions from our listeners. So let's bring them into the mix, because we always feel we're in their kitchens. So let's join the table. Frank is on from Dublin 16. He said, can you ask Chris, did you experience, Chris, that space between science and the mystery of life?
Well, that's a very thoughtful question from Frank. On board the spaceship, you're extremely busy. There's so many things to do, 200 experiments, keeping the ship healthy, understanding the world. But there are quiet moments by the window. It's a wonderful place to be contemplative.
Yes.
And around dinner, we would try and have those conversations as a crew of six people. And absolutely, you get a sense of time on board a ship. You get to see the world as a planet, as one place, not just one province of the particular country you're from, but start to see the whole thing collectively. And you get to a sense of the inevitable toughness of our world. I mean, we have serious problems to face right now.
Sure.
You know, the way we're changing the atmosphere so that it's affecting our climate, that's an unavoidable reality of the way we're creating energy right now. Mm-hmm. But what are we going to do about it? But at the same time, we tend to be a little bit Chicken Little-ish and, oh, everything's falling apart and why should I even have children in a world that's about to end? that's just a myopic, self-absorbed, self-important kind of attitude. The world's been here 4.5 billion years, and there's been life for 4 billion of them, and you get that beautiful sense of the toughness of our planet and the self-healing nature of our planet.
A resilience of sorts.
It doesn't absolve us from the responsibility of making good decisions and changing the way that we're creating energy and using electricity and such. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it gives you a great optimism. And I think that is part of what I try and share with people, is that we can surmount the problems that face us through the collective activity and thought and a sense of acknowledging the responsibility.
Looking out the window as you describe it, does it bring you closer to or further away from your God?
I got to go around the world over 2,600 times. And it's a conversation we have on board, all different faiths on board, and you need to respect everyone else's faith, of course. Whatever your beliefs are that gave you the tenacity and the strength and the internal fortitude and courage to be able to face up to those risks, it becomes deepened by the experience of seeing the world from a spaceship.
So whether that's Big Bang theory or the creation by God, whatever your belief is, that'll be emphasized and enhanced by looking at that window.
Absolutely. There are astronauts from all the different faiths of the world,
sure.
From all the different belief systems that give people courage and strength, and all of them should get a chance to go around the world 1,000 times and put them into a real deepening personal sense of perspective.
I'm not going to press you on your own, because I feel it's a very personal question that you probably feel, do you know what, you don't want to upset other people's beliefs. And would I be right in that interpretation?
The same way we treat it on board.
Is that right?
You need to respect other people's strengths and fears. But at the same time, honor it.
Mary in Cork is on to say, as a child, I was terrified of space and the darkness and the enormity of it. And when I saw and heard Chris Hadfield on American TV talking about it and the beauty and the miracle of it, I thought how relieved I would have been as a child if someone had spoken about it like that. Thankfully, as I grew up, the fear was replaced by fascination. I read his book, and Chris Hadfield has a gift for communication, which is charismatic, and I admire him tremendously. So
nice compliment. Lovely. The dark is for dreaming. The dark is where you see the stars. The dark is often where your mind can give you a whole new perspective of thought. So the childlike fear of the unknown and the fear of the dark, that's natural and normal. But finding a way to recognize the beauty and the magic of the velvety black of the darkness, and that's where you can see things that are invisible. Otherwise, I think it's a good process to go through as we grow up.
The mention of velvety black brings me to the next question, which is, here's a completely Irish head-scratching question for you by a text. If I poured a pint of Guinness in space, how long would it take to settle? Or would it settle at all? And who would drink it? Kind regards, concerned Guinness drinker of the future.
You can't pour without gravity. You couldn't even decant. So, and also the trouble is a bicarbonated beverage, even one like Guinness, the bubbles behave differently without gravity. They won't settle. In fact, they'll coalesce in the middle, and the Guinness will collect around the outsides of the glass, and the bubble will form in the center of the fluid.
Okay.
And then you'd be forced to drink Guinness through a straw from the outer parts of the glass or the container. So unfortunately, it wouldn't work. And so far, there's been no one to do it. So therefore, no one's been in a position to drink it. Well, maybe eventually.
But welcome back to Ireland, I think is really the point of that story.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, let's talk a little bit about that, because you tweeted photos of Ireland from space. Why did you do that?
When you first launch out of Florida, 10 minutes later, you're over Ireland. It's the first part of this hint of the continent that we see is Ireland appearing on the horizon. And it's beautiful because it's green. It's visibly green from space. But when you come across in the nighttime and you can see the individual lights of all the individual choices of everybody around the country, it's almost as if you've been welcomed into everybody's home slightly. I've left the light on for you. And there's a wonderful feeling of shared existence. And not just Ireland, the whole world that way. You get you're over Ireland. 90 minutes later, you're back around the world, back in Ireland again. So there's a wonderful collective perspective that comes from that. Sure. But what really thrilled and delighted me was in sending a picture of Dublin or wherever to have the warm response, sort of like the person asking the question about Guinness.
Yes.
There was a delightful shared sense of where we are. And that just grew. And then to learn from a friend just a few words of Irish and be able to share the experience that I was having and the perspective that I'd been given with people in a language that I'm not very familiar with. There's a lady here in town named Maria who's multilingual, who good friend of my daughter's, who was helping me with some
with
of
the
Irish
yeah,
language.
Yeah.
And that sharing of it in a way that other people could relate to it, whether it's language or perspective, it just opened up a wave of warmth that that still hasn't gone away. And so it's why I'm back as well.
Yeah, well, you became a friend of Ireland pretty immediately, and that continues to this day, which I'm glad to say. And the texts are, people are fascinated. And here's another one from Caroline. I'm so curious about Chris's parents and if they did or said anything as he was growing up that helped him to reach his potential from a parent of two boys. I'd love to have that insight.
My parents had an expectation that you would make the most of yourself. They respected work. They also thought you should be curious but never leave your curiosity unanswered. Just because you have a question does not absolve you from the responsibility of finding the answer for yourself. And so that imperative to answer your own questions and constantly build on the knowledge that you have and to take pride in it, to don't be an imposter in your own life, to take responsibility for your own thoughts and your own actions, to have a strong work ethic, but to also see the world and experience the joys of the world. That's the way I was raised. And it's never been easier than it is today. Each of us in our pocket has access to all the knowledge of the world and language of the world and communications with the world. And so to me, it's a wonderful time to be alive.
Well, that's a lovely note on which to end, because you're right. There is a lot of darkness in the world, and we see what's happening with Iran and the US, and we see what's happening with the bushfires in Australia. And the news just doesn't seem to be a very happy place. It can be, it has been. But at the same time, as you say, we've been here for a long time and there's ups and downs in the world.
I do just need to say before we go that part of the reason there are brush fires in Ireland right now is because the way that we're creating and burning energy in the world. And people need to be individually responsible. I've been working with Electric Ireland because they're looking for a way to let individual people make smarter choices as to how it is that we both consume and generate electricity,
yes,
which is becoming ever more important. And so the idea that individual awareness and responsibility can make a huge difference in energy consumption. And it's when you talk about new challenges in life, for me, that's one of the big ones. How do we generate power? How do we as individuals choose to use it? And I think working collectively together like we do up on the spaceship, it makes things much brighter in the future. And there's wondrous stuff happening in the world right now. And I try and get involved with things like programs that, Brighter Together than Energy, that Electric Ireland's using, to try and have people make better individual choices. They can be that 9-year-old kid looking towards the future and making different choices that allow them to pursue the things that are really important to them.
I think we could do about 2 hours conversation. honest to goodness, it's a real pleasure to talk to you. And you're just one of those people who, as I say, you could sit and listen to all day, and the texts reflect that. We'll cut a deal. Maybe come and see us again next time you're in town.
I would love to. It's such a pleasure to talk with you every time.
Every time.
Life is short and little moments like this are lovely.
Well, let's do it again in due course. But Chris Hadfield, thanks for coming to see us again.
Thanks,
wish you all the very best. Look forward to the next time.
Awesome.
All right. It's 7 minutes to 10 back shortly.